This is the Transcend in Life podcast with your host, J.M. Ryerson, taking you from fear to freedom.
Welcome back, everybody. I am so excited for today's episode. This person has been so incredibly influential to me, and Tom McCarthy is the go-to coach for dozens of Fortune 500 executives when it comes to leadership and effective communication. Tom began his leadership career in 1987, where he was hired as the chief revenue officer for Tony Robbins' company. The sales team he hired and developed shattered records and delivered over 200% annual sales growth year over year that Tom was there. Tom is passionate about helping people break through their limitations and create breakthrough results. He believes that every human being has the potential to be an outstanding communicator, and he's been on that mission since 1987 to help as many people as possible fulfill that promise. Tom's clients include Microsoft, Cisco Systems, MetLife, Wells Fargo, Principal, Levi Strauss, and Salesforce. Brother, thank you so much for being here. You have helped so many people, including myself. I'm really excited to have you.
Thanks, JM. It's great to be with you. And I really enjoyed watching your career. I remember you way back when we first met, and I could tell you were a superstar then, and you just continue to prove it over and over again.
Well, I appreciate that. I got to give the credit to the mentors, with you being one of those along the way that just shaped that and guided it. And, you know, I guess we'll start there with, you have such a unique story. You've helped so many accolades. I don't even know where to start, but you have a new book that's coming out. You've just done so much. Tell everybody a little bit about what you do, because I think it's so important that they hear it from you.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I do is I look at people and I see them bigger and more successful and happier and more fulfilled than maybe they see themselves. I think that's really my superpower. And then I try and help them see what I see. And so whether it's books or trainings or coaching, that really is my core philosophy. I just see the greatness in people. And in a nutshell, that really is what I try and focus in on.
Yeah. And you do that with so many people. What I love about your modesty and your humility is so infectious. And it's obviously, you've done so many things. And I'm going to say that over and over, because you look at your clientele. I mean, these people are moving and shaking the economy of the world. So how did you get into it? I know you obviously played football at UN at North Carolina, and then you got into, kind of give us a story of how you even got into this world of helping people with leadership, with personal development, with speaking, and so many of the amazing things you do.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for that intro. Played football is a little bit of an overstatement. I was on the team at University of North Carolina. We actually had a really good team. We were one of the top 10 teams in the country when I was there. And I played on the team, or I was on the team for 1 year, and then I had some injuries and didn't play after that, had some concussions and things like that. But following that, my initial goal was, I had a mentor in my life who'd been a friend of my dad's. My dad was killed in Vietnam when I was only 3 years old, so I never knew my dad. And we had a pretty challenging upbringing in that. Financially, we didn't have much. You know, I had two younger brothers that were also, when I was three, my dad died. My middle brother was two, and my youngest brother was 6 months old. He never even got to meet my dad. My dad was an Army officer. So we didn't grow up with much, and I wanted to, I wanted more. And at the time, I thought it was just, financial. I need to make more money. And so when I got out of college, my goal was to get into a profession where I could do that. And this mentor that I did have, who had been a friend of my dad's in the Army, his name was Mr. Woodbury. He was a stockbroker, financial advisor, and big time, like ended up running a company by the name of Dean Witter, and then another company called Sutro. So these were big firms. They're not around now. They've been absorbed by some of the other brokerage firms. But I got into that business, and I didn't know what I was doing. I was undercapitalized. I had like this little credit card. I shared the same first name as my dad. And even though my dad had been not on this planet for a long time, at my mom's house, we would still get these you know, get a credit card, Thomas McCarthy. It was Thomas W. McCarthy was my dad. And so I sent it back. I scratched out the W because I had no money, right? I had this job, no money. And so they sent me a credit card, Thomas McCarthy. So I scratched out the W. They took that off. And so I had credit, you know, and I could invite wealthy people out to lunch. And they had no clue how struggling I was, right? I had one suit probably and a credit card I could pay for some things with, hopefully making enough money to pay it back. And that's how I started. And I just like worked my tail off. I don't think I was very talented. I did not want to fail. I couldn't let my family down, my mom down. And so somehow I made it happen. I struggled at first. I questioned myself, all that kind of stuff. But I made it happen, and I became one of the top producing, I think the number two of the new brokers that year. And I was the youngest ever hired by this 50-plus-year-old firm. So I was like 10 years younger than the other guy that was ahead of me. And then by the second year, I was one of the top producers in the firm and was on my way, and they wanted to make me a manager. I was the number one person in my branch office. And then I meet this guy, Tony Robbins, and he wanted me to come out to California. I was on the East Coast, and he needed help running his company from the sales end. So I came out, again, did not know what I was doing, had no clue that I was going to have to stand up in front of people and give presentations, because if I would have known that, I don't think I would have come. I mean, that was not a skill I had. It was something I never thought I could have. And then I had to learn how to do it. And again, failing. Everything I'm good at now, JM, I was really lousy at early, like presenting. I've written two books on that. I was terrible. I sucked at it. And I just cringe when I think of how bad I was back then. Panic attacks, everything like that. Leadership. I got put into a leadership position. I didn't know how to lead. I'm this young person. I just want everyone to like me. I didn't know how to lead. And I had to learn that. Peak performance. I think even though I was an athlete in college, I was an underperforming athlete. I was scared every time I got out on the field. And I'd tighten up, and I never played at my full ability. And so peak performance I had to learn. So anyways, I got into these things, and then I loved them so much. One of the things that's always been important to me is to share what I learn, what's helped me with other people. And so that's really driven my career. And then from there, I've started my own company a long time ago, several companies. I've started companies in the restaurant business. We sold a chain of restaurants that helped start up and was the initial funder of those to a private equity firm about a year and a half ago. Been involved in the financial services business in a company with you that I ended up owning a small percentage of after helping the owner of that business kind of grow and expand his business. He gave that to me. I didn't ask for it. Helped start up a software company. And then I work with a lot of big companies. And that's a lot of fun working with, you know, people that are running $30, $40 billion organizations and startups too. Working with an executive now that just took a company public last year in the biotech space that has 10 drugs in the pipeline. So a lot of exciting stuff. And even though I'm an older guy, I'm still passionate and love what I do.
Well, brother, you unpacked so much there. I have to just, guys, if you can imagine this man saying he was not a good speaker, he's one of the best speakers I've ever seen. And truly, it's just hard for me to hear that. But I believe you, because Tom is the most genuine. It's obviously it happened. But there's some principles that you have helped people. You helped me tremendously. I talk about you on a week-to-in, week-out basis. Hey, I learned this. Where did that come from? Was it all trial and error? Was it how did you come about it? Because you unlock so much potential in people. What? How do you do it, man? It's really amazing.
Yeah. So the thing that the way that I've learned a lot of it, unfortunately, was trial and error. And then I learned that hey, success leaves clues. That's what Tony Robbins used to always tell me. Success leaves clues. Find someone who's already done it, and then see what they've done. And so that's what I've tried to do, you know, with speaking, with leadership. I try, and one of the other things I think that I'm good at, if I do have a little bit of a natural talent, is to take something that looks really complex. Like a lot of people say, oh my gosh, giving a presentation, that's so many things you've got to master. And then what I do is I look at it, okay, is it so many things? Or is it just a few things that really matter? And then there's some nuances to those things. But what I always try and do is break things down into a three, no more than three big concepts or ideas. So it's consumable, number one for me, and then I can share it. And so with speaking, for instance, I saw that, why do people struggle? Well, one reason they struggle, they don't really know what they're going to say, or they don't feel good about what they're going to say. Why else do they struggle? Well, they show up and they've got anxiety, they've got nerves, they don't think it's going to go well. Why else do they struggle? Well, when they communicate, they can't keep people's attention. So to me, those are the big struggles I saw. I said, all right, well, what are the three things people do that are great? They know how to create a compelling story. Boom, idea number one. Number two, they show up feeling like a winner. They don't show up going, how's this going to go? I hope it goes well. They know they crushed it. Not with an arrogant attitude, but they just have confidence. Even if there's a little hiccup, they know it's going to go well. And then the third thing, they energize and engage people. So now I've got three things that I've learned from people, right? Three big ideas that I can go out and share. And that's what, you know, one of my books was based around. I do the same thing with leadership. And then I've got a book coming out on peak performance called Life Without Limits that, you know, we can discuss if you'd like. Or again, I've got three big ideas. So I try and simplify, because the more complex you make it for someone to follow, the less likely they're going to be able to follow and expand and grow.
Yeah, I think for me, that's always been so impressive is the lasting power. I mean, I started working with you, I want to say now 17, 16 years ago, and I still talk about these lessons that are relatively simple, but, you know, I use them every single day. I definitely want to talk about peak performance. And guys, he has literally worked with Olympic gold medalists. Both of his kiddos played sports at a high level in college. So for you to be an underperforming athlete, and I'm using air quotes, guys, because I, again, this man's humble. I got to go back and look. I think he's not saying it all. I'm sure he definitely played quite a bit. But you coach your kiddos to the point that they played at this high level. You've coached this peak performance. How do you unlock that in people? That's really unique. And I think it's pretty, everybody wants that. They want to give their best. So how do you do that?
Yeah. First thing is, I don't believe in limits. So the title of my book is Life Without Limits. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to have some fairy tale existence and everything's going to be peachy keen every minute of the day. That's not the way we're meant to live. We're meant to have challenges. Challenges are the best growth opportunities. You know that. I mean, that's how, you know, you've shaped your life, and it's why you're so successful. It's not because everything's been easy for you. And, you know, with my kids, that was a big thing. You know, I always worked with them where, and I didn't, you know, their sports, like my son was a college basketball player. I played some basketball growing up. I love the sport, but I didn't play at a high level. He did. Starting point guard, Division I, played big games on ESPN, and had lots of challenges. Had health challenges, had concussions. Maybe it runs in the family. My daughter was an All-American, a parade All-American soccer player. Again, a sport I knew very little about. And went to UCLA, won a national championship, played on some of the younger USA teams that would travel the world. So one of the top players in the U.S. And again, I didn't know anything about that sport. What I coached them on was really the fact that they could be as good as they wanted to be. And they weren't limited by, hey, someone else is faster than me, you know, I guess I can't succeed this level. Okay, well, there's another angle you can have. There's another advantage you can have. One of the concepts I believe in is any game you play, whether it's the game of podcasting or the game of basketball or soccer or the game of chess or the game of sales or what, or game of parenting, to win the game, though, you have to change the game. Most people are playing it in a way where they're going to end up average. And they're looking at everyone else, you know, and they're justifying, hey, this is what everyone else is doing, so I'm going to do it. What I try and look at is, who's standing out? You know, who are the people that are elevated up above average? What are they doing? And then how can I do that? And that's what I've taught my kids to do. And so they have had success probably beyond their athleticism they inherited from me for sure. They played at some very, very high levels, and it was fun to watch them. And they also experienced some challenges. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the fairy tale existence. They both had in college some tough times, either with health or other different challenges that they had to work through, but they did it and they came out stronger human beings.
So parents, listen up. I mean, Tommy played at Harvard, your daughter at UCLA. I mean, these are pretty darn impressive academic schools and also athletically speaking, but you talked about it. So failure, what is the process when failure occurs? Because as any athlete, entrepreneur, failure's coming inevitably. What is your process, Tom, that you kind of step people through that, hey, you got knocked back, you got knocked down. This is how you get back up and not only, get back up, but even grow in that process. Do you have a specific process for that?
Yeah, we used to say at Tony Robbins' company, there's no such thing as failure. As long as you learn something, it's not a fail, right? It's now, if somebody doesn't get the result they want, and then they beat themselves up and they don't grow or learn, that probably is a failure, right? That's a true fail. But that never has to be that way, right? You know, we say, like, if you try something that doesn't work out, hey, you've checked off something that doesn't work out, you've learned from it. Maybe it sparks some creativity where you try something a little bit different or you tweak it. So that's a win. You know, that really is a win. And I think it's hard. It's hard when you put your heart into something and you really believe and, you know, you've worked hard and it doesn't work out. But those are some of the best moments of your life when you look back at it. I'm sure you can look back at things like that. I know I can. Or even not just failure. I mean, I look back at even things like my dad passing away when I was young. I mean, for a long time, that was really a hard experience for me because I formed a story in my head, which is one of the keys to living a life without limits, is what's the story in your head? But the story in my head was one of limitations. It was one of fear. It was one like, hey, life's not fair. I didn't have a dad. He got taken away. You know, how can I believe in anything? How can I feel safe? And so for a long time, that was the story I was carrying around in my head until I realized I can upgrade my story, just like you can upgrade the program on a computer, right? They're always coming out with new and better upgrades, right? You don't want to run the old program. You want the new program, more bells and whistles, more capabilities. A lot of times those human beings are running the old program. And so, you know, I was running old programs and I didn't know you could run new programs. I had to learn it. I had to read. I had to, you know, meet people like, you know, like people like you that in my life that remind me of new programming. And so I changed my programming. I said, you know, look, this wasn't a terrible experience. I mean, it was terrible. And I wish it in some ways, I wish I had my dad. But you know what? That shaped me. That experience enabled me to have a level of empathy I don't think I would have had if everything would have been perfect in my life. So I care for people at a deeper level. That experience made me more creative. I didn't have it, the advantages of having a dad and, you know, all the guidance along the way. I had to be innovative. I had to be creative. I started businesses when I was like, you know, 10 years old. And I never would have done that had I had the perfect, you know, what we all want family. I think it also made me a better leader. I had to step up. I had two younger brothers. My mother never remarried. It shaped me into somebody who was going to become a leader because I needed to lead. I needed to take some responsibility from the get-go. So I think when we look at failure, we look at things that don't go right. You know, if you understand the universe is always working in your favor, which is one of my favorite sayings, it's not a mistake. It's there to help you. And when you realize that in the moment, all right, it makes your life a little bit better, a little easier.
You know, as I've watched you through the years and I've learned, you have a process. It's not like Tom wakes up and this is the greatest day. Like, you have a process that you go through and you send out some, if you're willing to share kind of what your daily looks like, because I think it's so important. You know, people have their routines, but you are very clear. You have a concerted effort about what you're doing, and it does deal with the universe. You send out so much love. Can you share some of what you do? So I think so many people could gain from your perspective.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I think the older I get, the more I realize, you know, there's one of my big ideas and how to live a life without limits. There's three of them. One is focus on less, then obsess, then have a passion for a few things you really want to break through. The second is upgrade your story, upgrade your life. Talked a little bit about that. And then the third one is pack your day with effective actions. And I used to think when I was younger, effective actions is just working your tail off and, you know, massive action and, you know, make as many calls or emails or contacts or, you know, work as hard as you can. And then I realized there's two types of actions. There's achievement actions, which are meetings, calls, writing things, all those types of things where we're trying to achieve something, move towards where we want to be. But then there's also replenishment actions. They're replenishing your capabilities every day. You know, sleep, which I know is a big one for you, is one of those. Meditation, which I know is big for you. Both those are big for me too. Exercise, gratitude, you know, all these different things that replenish us, eating nourishing foods, live foods. So I do have like a little ritual that really is, it's a little bit selfish, but in a good way, because it's just designed to, even though I am sending energy out to other people, it's designed to get me right for the day. It's so I can go and be the most productive, because, you know, I don't know about you, but I do not wake up every single morning feeling, you know, a 10 out of 10. Sometimes, and it's not like 90% of the time either. Sometimes I do. But a lot of times it's like, it's not like it's terrible, but it's just kind of like, right? And then sometimes you don't get enough sleep or something's bugging you and it's like, oh man. But you still got to get yourself ready. So I start the day in bed with a little process I learned years ago. And the first thing I just really start doing is I start letting go of anything I'm holding on to that's not right for helping me be the best I can be that day. So it could be fears, anxieties, you know, angers. And I don't even consciously feel those emotions that much. But I think within all of us, you know, we've held on to some resentments, angers, jealousies. And so I don't want to, you know, I look at it as everyday process. It's like that plate I remember in the dining halls at the university, right? You know, you go in the cafeteria, you take a plate, guess what pops up? Another one. So I think even as we release, we're constantly letting go of things that aren't serving us. So that's the first thing I do. I literally like start to feel things being released from me, my mind, my body that I just don't need, like dead weight. Second thing I do is I just see my entire body and mind filled with this beautiful light, like this nourishing, you know, beautiful, universal, divine light, just kind of healing and nourishing and providing energy and just kind of just feeling that, you know, throughout me, just for a minute or two. And then what I do is I send it out. So I want not that just for me. I want it for you. I want it for your family. I want it for every person on the planet, and not just the good people, the people that maybe I might judge and say, oh, they're, you know, they're evil, they're not nice. Hey, those people, they're creatures of God too. So I send it out, and I don't see everybody's faces, but I just see it going out to everybody, not discriminating. Oh, JM gets some, but no, not that person right next to him. Like everybody and all the creatures and planets and the planet, right? Mother Earth. Then after that, what I do is I just start taking myself, my family, friends, and just seeing bubbles of light, protective bubbles of light, nourishing bubbles of light. And then I give thanks. I just, you know, say thank you for everything and everyone. So start my day like that. And then I pop out of bed, and that's like a 10-minute ritual. I like to get some activity, some Qigong or some exercise in very, very early. That's really important, I think, for me. I get a meditation in minimum once, target twice a day. And then, you know, in the moment, I've got like little mantras that I fire off and I'm getting ready for a podcast or a Zoom call, right? And I just was, let's say, maybe talking with my 88-year-old mother-in-law who lives with us, right? So I got to get myself ready to play at a different level than having a conversation with an 88-year-old where I'm, you know, I'm pretty more subdued, not as energetic, right? Just being where she's at. So I've got different rituals. I think they're important to get us ready for whatever we're going to do.
Well, one of the things that you've you've done, and I've been on the receiving end, guys, and I hope you're okay with me sharing, but he sends out, I think the number's around 3 texts per day to people that you're just thinking about, and you send out this love. And guys, it people that you may not talk to, I've done it. I followed Tom's lead on this, and I remember getting one of his because he and I had maybe not lost contact for a couple of years, and I got this just amazing text about, you know, hey, I really think you're an amazing person, and I was just thinking about you. I cannot tell you how much that meant to me and how much that's meant for people that I've sent it to. Do you continue to do that still today, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's more than 3. I mean, there may be a day or two that I forget. You know, I think everything you have to understand, no, there's no perfect people, right? We all do our best. The more that we can stay true to our rituals, right, the more powerful. But yeah, it's been a really important thing for me to do that. And it's something that makes me feel good, number one, because when you start without wanting anything in return, reaching out, connecting with human beings and just saying something nice. Or this morning, I did at least 3 this morning, but one of them was to a lady who has been a client, and she's really a wonderful human being, but her mother has stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And I've just been in touch with her recently, during this whole process. And this morning I just said, you know, I really need to reach out. And so that was kind of cool. And we just had a little conversation via text, but we're going to talk a little bit later. But just that kind of thing, it makes you feel good. And even if you're in sales, which, you know, I'm in a business where I've got lots of clients, these non-salesy touches are so rewarding and they feel so good. And they lead to business, right? I mean, it's pretty amazing, and that's not why I do it. But people, when you're thinking of them and they know you've got some expertise in some areas, I have this concept also on how to increase your luck, right? Your opportunities. It's one of the things I teach. You know, just be constantly sending out energy. I've gone to the Middle East 15 times, or actually more than that, Kuwait 15 times, Dubai probably 4 times, speaking engagements, been paid huge sums of money to go over there. And it started with a little conversation I had in an elevator with 2 strangers. I was speaking at a big seminar over in London. And these guys, Middle Eastern attire, were coming down in the elevator with me at the same hotel. I'm walking over to the conference center. I just said, hey, how are you guys doing? And we just got into a little conversation. All I wanted to do was just to make them feel good and find out where they're from. And end up, they didn't even know I was speaking at this conference. They're in my session. They come back. They said, we want to bring you over to Dubai. And this is a long time ago. Where's Dubai? I know where it is now. And they said, yeah, we want to bring you over. And they said, you know, just tell us what your fee is. I sent them a note with my fee. I said, they're probably not going to want to pay this, right? It was, you know, kind of a lot of money. And they go, is that it? Right. And I go, yeah. So I've been over there a bunch of times, but it started with a little conversation. So it doesn't have to be a text. It could just be in an elevator, being kind to someone, reaching out on a plane, you know, caring about who your seatmate is and showing an interest in their family or something like that. So it comes in many different forms, but I try and do that every single day.
Yeah, and I've watched it in action. And again, I think what's so amazing is you're not looking for anything other than to share some love, look out for somebody that maybe needs that. And I've truly watched it. So I want to ask about the book, Life Without Limits, brother. I cannot wait for it to come out. I cannot wait to read it. But you said upgrade your story, upgrade your life is what I wrote down. I think I got that correct. Yeah. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I think I know the concept. And I can't wait to read about it in the book. I don't want to give away the book.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
What is that idea? What does that mean?
Well, it's the second big idea in the book. You know, we have a story in our heads about who we are, how good we are, what we can do, what we can't do, what things mean. And it basically creates our reality. It's why I have a quote that average conforms to reality. Greatness expands reality. And so the average person is just going to look at everyone else's story about what something means, and they're going to conform to that. The great person is going to look at everyone else's story and go, all right, I don't like that story. I'm going to create a better story. I'm going to create a story that allows me to see things that they're not seeing. And that's one of the important concepts. Like we think, we look at something, we go, yeah, I see what's there. You don't really see what's there. You see your version of what's there. You see through your lens, what's there. Because we don't even see with our eyes. We see with our story, with our brain, right? We don't hear with our ears. We hear with our story. It's why someone can say something and two people can hear it, and they have a whole different version of what that means or if it's even true. It's why, right now with the whole political battles, right? People can live in the same city and have a very different story about what that city needs or what the country needs or, who's the right leader, who's the wrong leader. And so everybody has a story in their head that's guiding their actions. What you do is driven by the story you have. And then the more embedded that story becomes, it creates habits. It's, strong stories become habits, and they're almost unconscious. You're not even knowing you're thinking, you're telling yourself that story anymore. It just becomes your identity, your truth. And so to get to where we want to go, you have to understand if where you are right now, which is probably fine, right? But it's not where you want to be tomorrow. Your story that you have right now is not capable of getting you to where you want to go. The story you have right now, and I'm not saying you, but you, me, all of us, the story we all have right now has gotten us to where we are right now. To go to a different place, we have to upgrade our story. And that means thinking differently. It means challenging ourselves with thoughts. Sometimes it don't even make sense. I had an experience one time where I was over in Europe, and I was giving these leadership seminars, and I think they were 2-day seminars. And so I started in, and it was like 1,000 people in each one, so it's a pretty big group. And I started in Luxembourg. I did one, and then I went to Germany, and I did one, and it was all within 1 week. And I lost my voice in Germany, and then I had to finish in London. And so by the time I got to London, I had very little voice. I was talking like this. 1,000 people. I had a microphone, but this is what I was talking like. And I was a little bit afraid. I'm like, man, is my voice even going to hold out? Like, that was day one. I had no voice. And so people are feeling so sorry for me. And they're coming up and during breaks, and they're giving me lotions and potions and, sticking needles in parts of my body. And I mean, they're trying to be helpful. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I'll try anything because I just want my voice. And then someone said, you know what it is? And I said, no, what? They said, well, it's because when you travel, you're on airplanes, and other people's germs are being circulated through the air conditioning on airplanes. That's why you're getting sick. And I started to think, you know what? That makes sense. Yes. That's what I almost bought into that story. And then I started thinking about it. I said, hold on a second. That's a BS story. Because I travel a lot. Not now, but normally, just like you, I travel a lot. If I buy into the fact, if I put a story in my head that air conditioning is making me sick, that's going to impact my immune system. And so I called time out on that. I said, hell no, I am not going to take that story on it. And then I said, all right, well, what story could I have? Like, and this is what I'm always doing. And this is a little bit silly, but I just I flip the game, right? I just tilt the tables and I go, all right, I'm going to just create a story that I'm going to believe. Doesn't have to be true to anyone else. I said, air conditioning strengthens my immune system. And so I got an airplane. I'm like, yeah, man, look at it. Feel the air conditioning. My immune system's getting stronger already. And honestly, I bought into that and I haven't lost my voice since. And that was probably 20 years ago. But I was always losing my voice like 20 years ago.
That's, I mean, it truly, our minds are so incredible. Yeah, I love that because you literally did change. You changed the game for yourself. I just have to ask this. It wasn't on my list of questions, but as I'm listening to you talk, and I think you've spoken in 24 countries. Is that correct? 24 around the world?
Yeah, I lost track. I don't know how many it is now, but I think at one point it was 24. It might be more than that now.
I'm just curious. So you know, you mentioned the Middle East, a lot of Europe, obviously all throughout the U.S. How much do you have to cater and change your principles of presentation to that audience? Because obviously we have different backgrounds. We've been raised in different ways. I'm just curious. You're talking. I'm like, I've never asked Tom this. I just got to know, how different is it to give a presentation in Dubai versus Arkansas or, you know, somewhere like that?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question. I remember when I first, and I've been to Asia and, you know, many, many, many times, love it. Australia, that part of the world. When I went to Dubai for the first time, I remember they held a special luncheon for me, or maybe it was a dinner, I can't remember, but I was sitting around with all these people from the Middle East, and it was right after, like, 9/11. In the U.S. And so this was, you know, 2001, 2002, I can't remember. But they said, because, you know, they were very sensitive about it. You know, they were good human beings, right? And they were very sensitive about it. And someone asked me, they said, and they were sitting, they all had their traditional Middle Eastern attire. And they said, what do you think of us? And I looked at this person and I said, or they said, what were you thinking about us when you came here in light of everything that's happened? And I told them the truth. I said, when I came here, what I was thinking was that I was going to get to be with some amazing human beings. And I see in you the same thing that I see in me and people that I love. We're all human. And so I think it's a little bit, to me anyways, and there are some maybe localized differences. But I think at the end of the day, we're all human beings and we all want the same things. We want to be happy. We want to be fulfilled. We want to be successful. We want to be loved. We want to be cared for. Some societies are a little bit more open in expressing that. Some aren't. But I think we really do want the same things. And so I don't change much when I go someplace else. I always start with feeling a connection to who I'm talking to, feeling a love and a care for them. I have like this little mantra for that, right? I've got like a little story where I look at people as friends and family, and they might not look anything like me, but I still see them as like a family member. I feel like they're a friend. I remember I was in the UK many years ago, and I just happened to flip the TV on. I don't watch a ton of TV, but it was a BBC show, and they were asking people to donate DNA. And they wanted to see, like, what are the commonalities we have as human beings? And so it was really interesting because the people that they had that volunteered, they wanted some diversity. So they had a gentleman from Africa. They had a gentleman from Asia. They were all men, I think, but they had someone from the UK. And then they had, I can't remember where it was, but they had, like, really diverse. And guess what they found out? If you go back, and it wasn't like super far, but if you go back and maybe it was like, let's say, you know, eight generations, they all had common ancestors and they didn't look anything alike. And I did some research. I can't remember what it was, but if you go far enough back, we all came from like, a common grandparent, right? You know, so it's we're just so much alike. And the division and the trying to own this piece and you can't come here. And it's a little crazy to me. I just think, you know, we really are, we're the human race, right? You know, and so when I travel, that's what I try and focus in on.
That's awesome. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about something that's still been on my bathroom mirror since I met Tom 17 years ago, and it's called Playing Full Out. That concept has meant so much to me. I don't know how much time you could break that down, but it's just, I think everyone should know what this is. It's meant so much to me throughout my career. Can you share what you mean by that when you say that?
Yeah, and I can't take credit for that. You know, that was something Tony Robbins taught me. That was one of his concepts, is to, like, if you're going to play, like, give it everything you got. And you know, zero fear. Like, hey, I might fail. So what? Another one of my friends has a great mantra. It's take risks, fail fast. So, you know, get out there, get it done, you know, give it everything you got. And if you're going to fail, fail fast. Like, you know what's not going to work quicker than, you know, dilly dallying or dipping your toe in the water and then eventually figuring out, hey, this isn't going to work. Well, yeah, you could have known that 2 weeks ago. You could have been on to so many more things. And so, you know, I'm not perfect, right? You know, I mean, I try and play full out in things that I do, but my wife would tell you, you know, probably cleaning up the house, I'm it's maybe not the way that I do it sometimes. But in things that really matter to me, where they're going to impact other human beings, I try and take that philosophy on and just, you know, do my best. And that's the other thing too. Here's my number one rule. Like, I used to try and be perfect. And then I would, like, you know, flub something or do this, beat myself up. I don't even try and be perfect anymore. If I give a presentation or if I'm on a podcast, like, I probably made so many mistakes already on this podcast, flub a word, that type thing. How many do you think I've made, Jam? Have you been counting?
I've counted none, Tom. I think you've done great. No, I don't know, brother. I mean, I know I messed up 3 times in the intro, so.
Yeah. Well, I think I've made like 84 so far. Now, I totally made that number up. I don't even know, but I'm not worried about it. All I know is that if I can, at the end of this, go, you know what? That's all I had. I gave JM everything I had. I gave the people who listen to this everything I had. To me, that's a win. And even if I'm trying something new that I'm not very good at, if I can just go in there and give it my best, that's what I always taught my kids growing up. I said 2 things. When you play a sport or whatever you're doing, I said, have fun and do your best. Right. You know, do your best. And then if your best wasn't good enough, hey, good. Figure out how to get better if you want. Right. Or play a different sport if you don't like that sport. Right. And your best wasn't good enough. But if you do your best, you just feel good. Even I remember when I was an athlete and I did get a chance to play on the field one time and I played the game and we lost. But I felt good. And I'm like, why do I feel good? Why? Because I had drained myself in that competition. I had nothing left. And I just knew that was all I had. And it just was a great feeling. So that's really what the mentality means to me.
It's meant a lot to me through the years too, brother. So I appreciate it, whether it was you or Tony. It really didn't matter. It stuck with me and it's just meant so much. So when is the book Life Without Limits? When is that coming out, Tom?
It's a great question. It's written. And so now we're just going through the process of, you know, final edits and creating the cover. And I don't exactly know. I would estimate probably, I would say within the next 3 months, it should be out. And it's a lot of fun. It's a parable. So it's something that hopefully will draw people in. And it's not one of these fairy tale ones either, right? You know, there's definitely some twists and turns that are unexpected, and because I think that's the way life really is. And so I wanted to write it with, you know, there's a little bit, when I say darkness, I don't mean, you know, evil, but the dark days allow us, that we all face, allow us to know what the bright days look like. And so, and the dark days tend to be the days where we learn the most and grow the most, because things aren't working. So we have to innovate. So there's a little bit of that in there for the character as they go through this journey to living a life without limits. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, my son read the first draft and he's a younger person. And you know, I'm an older person. And the fact that he said, Dad, this is really good, right? Made me feel pretty good.
I can't wait, guys. We'll make sure to announce it when it is. We got a definite date on it. So, Tom, what should I have asked you that I didn't know enough to ask? What would you like to leave the audience with that I didn't ask you?
I don't think you missed anything. I thought you did a great job. I'm not sure what else you know, there is left to ask. I mean, there's lots of things we could talk about, but I just enjoyed it. I mean, you're one of my favorites. I always from the day I met you, I just knew that you were somebody special. And I really loved your book. I loved how you started off with vulnerability, because I really do see that in you. And I think that's one thing too. I mean, we can have maybe a little short discussion on that. That's been one of the biggest lessons for me also, as I know it was for you. I used to think I had to be perfect. You know, that was my thing as a leader. You know, I had to be perfect. I could not make a mistake. I could never show any vulnerability and ask somebody else, you know, what their thoughts were. I had to dictate and prescribe, because that's what great leaders do. And it was so far from the truth. And being vulnerable and really feeling, you know, even the dark feelings that sometimes pop up, and not burying them, because when they're buried, they stay there, right? When you feel them, they pass through and they're gone. So that was big for me. And I love seeing you help a lot of people in your book with, right at the beginning, making that okay for them. So, I'm thrilled to be with you. It's always cool to hang around you. I love you, love your family. And thank you very much for having me on.
Ah, brother, the feeling is so reciprocal. But before we go, how can our listeners connect with you online, Tom, to learn more about so much of the amazing things that you do?
I've got a couple websites. They're actually being upgraded. So the ones that are out there right now, or the version of it, is still going to be the same address. It's not what I want. But if you want to get better as a presenter, fireuptraining.com you can go to. And we will be putting up a free mini course. Won't cost you anything. It's got some tips and things I think are important. It comes from a live presentation I did, so it's great energy, and I think you'll enjoy that. You can sign up for that. I think that's going to go up in the next couple days, so look for that. The version up now is as of today, which this will probably launch later anyway. So by the time this goes out, you should be good to go. And then TomMcCarthy.com is my core site, so that's speaking, and I will have some resources being put up on that. Instagram, I've got some video that I tend to put out, although I'm not as regular as probably you are, JM. I've got to keep up on it, but it's at the Tom McCarthy. And I don't have a huge ego. I didn't put the because, like, oh, you know, talk about himself in the third person. It's Tom McCarthy was already taken. And so I saw someone else do that. So we ended up going with that. And then for leadership, leadingwinningteams.com is a site that I have. So those are really the big value adds. I will also be coming out with a training on Forbes. So I've been selected by Forbes as one of their thought leaders, and I'll have some trainings in their Knowledge Innovation Center, and that will be coming out in a month or two also.
Well, congrats on that. Brother, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all the time you've spent, you poured into me, the influence you've continued to do, not only for myself, but all my team. You're truly a remarkable human being, and I do love you, man. I really appreciate everything you've done through the years.
Yeah, thanks. Love you too. And can't wait to see all the great things that you're going to continue doing. You've been a rocket ship so far, and the best is still ahead of you, JM. So looking forward to big things from you.
I appreciate it so much, Tom. You guys, thank you so much for joining us. Until next week, continue to transcend in life. Have a great week. Thank you so much for listening. If this content is delivering value to you, please make sure to subscribe, rate, and review us. That helps us build this community, and that is what we are all about. Building this community as big as we can, helping as many people as we can, and deliver as much value as possible. Be sure to head over to transcendinlifepodcast.com for information on my coaching courses, and make sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Let's Go Win 365. Let's go win and transcend in life.
This is the Transcend in Life podcast with your host, JM Ryerson, taking you from fear to freedom.